Now, also another company where, you know, who learned from their their mistakes is Motorola. So Motorola at one point of time in, you know, more in the early 2000s was having a lot of problem with their quality related issues with especially their semiconductor business. So they decided to adopt and which worked out very well for them. They decided to adopt the Six Sigma approach. And in this Six Sigma approach, you have a lot of elements of define the problem, measure the problem, you know, implement the solutions, communicate. So they have a lot of, you know, processes and stages in this, and they put their operations through this Six Sigma model, and eventually they got their act together and, you know, managed to improve their customer satisfaction scores and improve, obviously, their both their costs and their bottom line. So you have the gap identification and then responding to it is very, very important, even when you have a well-designed service. Now, when you have a badly designed service, then, of course, there is a lot of rehaul which has to be done. There is a, you know, you have to go back to the, you know, you have to go back to your ideation. You have to go back to assessing everything involved and kind of go back to ground zero a little bit. There are various other forms which cause gaps. Now, sometimes you have someone who's unhappy, who's a customer who's unhappy, not responding. And at the same time, they're not even cooperating with the resolution. So then a gap can also happen where, you know, it's the customer only who's not giving proper feedback. Okay, you know, communicate with me what your issue is. You want to close your account, please communicate with me what the issue is. Where are the gaps? What has led to it? So you could, now it is the employees, it is the company's business and of interest to them that they ensure that their service agents don't have a problem and they are actually ensuring that the customer cooperates. Because from a customer's point of view, you know, if not you, I have another service to go to, you know. So the motivation for the serving agents, the service agents has to be that much higher where they need to understand why the customer is not cooperating and try to get him to cooperate as much as possible. And this again goes back to hiring, the right kind of hiring, the right kind of training, the skill enhancement. Because as we already know, this is one of the highest churn industries as far as employment is concerned. So people are, a lot of customer service agents are already extremely demotivated because they don't look at this industry as a an industry with a lot of growth potential, you know, growth opportunities for them. So very important to keep them motivated, to keep them motivated stakeholders so that they are ensuring not only their own cooperation, but cooperation from the customer as well. Now, obviously, inefficiencies come in from, you know, let's say someone promised something which is non-deliverable or promised something which is does not have a sign-off from their senior. Then those unreasonable promises can lead to a lot of unrealistic expectation and then dissatisfaction from the customer. So, you know, especially when it comes to a waiver of fees, upgrades, etc. Someone may, a customer service agent in the interest of resolving something may promise something. A lot of times these promises are not necessarily made in writing, so record may or may not be kept. And then when you know, the company expresses its inability to deliver on that, the customer is disappointed that, you know, then you shouldn't have promised it to me to begin with. And then starts a he said, she said, you know, the agent saying, I didn't exactly and you didn't. And then if there's a record, you show that. And then someone gets up and says, okay, we're sorry, but, you know, the customer service agent promised this to you, but our policy does not permit us to offer it to you. So all of this, there has to be everyone, the employees top down have to be on the same page. You know, very often we are talking to a junior executive. There are seniors, supervisors who are involved and they all have to be on the same page because gaps will then lead to, you know, differing expectations, differing promises, which obviously cannot be serviced. Other elements which influence service quality are flexibility. Various other, customers appreciate if, you know, their inputs are taken, suggestions are taken, where there is, from an employee point of view, there is skill upgradation, there is training. All of these things become very important. So to give you an example of flexibility, typically when you will call a customer service helpline, you will hear some IVR message saying that, you know, we are available during our office hours of 10 to 5 or 10 to 6. And typically post that, no one will pick up and you will not have you will only go to a voice recorded message and you have to wait till the next day. Now, let's say that there is a customer service agent who has interacted with you during those working hours, and they need to get back to you and it's an urgent situation. Now, if they stick to the working hours, then they'll be getting back to you only the next working day and you are spending the entire night, evening and night stressing. Think of it from a travel point of view, from an airline point of view. A lot of times, you have an urgent travel coming up and you, if you have to wait all night with uncertainty, it's going to be really, really stressful. So if a customer service agent goes out of their way and has a resolution for you and gets back to you, even in non-business working hours, assuming their SOP and the regulation permits them to do so, then that kind of flexibility, adaptability versus rigidity of, no, now it's 5:01 and now I'm going to get back to you only tomorrow, can make a huge difference and can ensure that you have a happy customer who stays with you. To give you an example of service quality and satisfaction where someone was flexible, adaptable, went out of their way. So one of the airlines which someone was traveling internationally on one of the airlines several years ago when I was reading about this, and they had an experience that they had bought a very cheap discounted ticket and, absolutely fine, good for them. They spotted an opportunity. And when they were, traveling, then when they were flying back, it appears that someone tried to bump them off at some international airport and tried to accommodate, someone who was on standby, because standby passengers always give, are willing to pay much higher amount for that same seat. Now, this person fought and was stressed and fought. And you can imagine, international, and you're being told, no, for whatever reason, sorry, it's not confirmed or you're late or whatever, some excuse being made. And they fought and everything and got onto the flight. But it was stressful. It was very stressful. Now, again, they managed to find a good, discounted ticket on the same airline when flying internationally again. And now the phobia and the stress started hitting them. Oh, my God. I bought a cheaper ticket. I'm going to be stuck in some international language, where they're being international location, where they're being high-handed. They're talking among themselves in a language I can't comprehend, and they're going to try to bump me off because they very often try to accommodate standby passengers. So I don't want this. I don't want to ruin my entire vacation stressing out over this. So they did something really crazy, and they called the airline before flying out, even before like taking their outward flight. And they called a number or an email that had been listed for post-travel experience. That if you want to share a post-travel experience, then please come back and share it out here. But what they did was they called that number and they just took a chance and they called that number, and whoever picked up, they said, look, we know that this number is for post-travel experience, but I want to tell you that I've had a bad post-travel experience in the past. This is what happened. I'm again in a situation when I'm flying with you, I have a very cheap ticket, and I don't want a situation where, someone tries to bump me off on my return in some international location because they feel they can, bully an Indian traveler. So what can I do? Can you give me some local employee's number at the airport so that if there is an issue, I can, reach out to someone and ensure that I'm put on the flight, because you have your leave days and then you have to report back to work and all of that. And now whoever this person was said that, look, you have expressed this to me. I'm sorry this happened. You please be rest assured. This is not going to happen again. You've told me. That's it. Now, just forget about it. This is not going to happen again. We are going to take extra care. also gave him the this person him the exact number, the landline number at the desk for the employee in that international location at the office, at the airport desk. And then this person flew off, went off, okay, fine. Right from the time that the person, this person who had gone to the press with his positive experience, right from the time that this person reached the airport in India to fly out, there was a message had been received at the check-in desk that this person will be checking in, has to be taken extra care of because of a past experience that has to be negated. Right from then, they were escorted by staff who ensured all of their check-in, security, etc. happened. They were upgraded. They were on the flight. The airline crew came and checked on them a couple of times, and to the point of becoming embarrassing, they were being cared about so much. They got off, took off, you know, great. On the way back, and remember, way back is from an international location where India's control, Indian employees' control may be so much. And again, they reached the airport at the international location, and again, a replication of the same experience, right from check-in, escorted through security, extra special care, upgraded on the way back, asked five times on the flight, are you okay or not, to the point of collecting the bags, landing, collecting the bags, and being dropped to the cab. And at one point of time, they asked them like, okay, have you confused me for some other VVIP? Because I don't know why I'm getting this extra care. And then they reveal that, look, looks like you had a past experience and you shared it. And we wanted to make sure that, you know, you forget about it. Give us another, we are happy you're giving us another chance. And we wanted you to feel secure and, you know, not uncertain about your flying experience. So you see how this flexibility of going out of the way, and it didn't require money or compensation, which this gentleman wasn't asking for to begin with, you know. He just wanted certainty that I'm not going to be like stuck fighting in some international country that please give me my seat that I have booked and don't bump me off for a standby passenger willing to pay more than me. But they went out of their way with so much assurity. Now, if this is not flexibility and adaptability, what is? So, and to the point where this person, they not only got the loyalty of this person, but this person became a promoter and a brand ambassador by going to the press with a positive experience. It's very, very common for people to go to the press with negative experience and, press and social media and list that and, you know, then have everyone give brickbats. But a lot of people don't come back and take out the time. A lot of customers, after a positive experience, don't take out the time to also give positive feedback. Negative feedback we give immediately, but positive feedback and appreciation for extra service and extra care, not too many people take out the time to do that. But here, this gentleman took out the time to do that, sent a special email to the top management, listed the whole thing, and, you know, even gave an interview to, some publication, some outlet about this. So this would then lead to so much positive press, publicity, this whole net promoter score, the customer becoming your promoter. So flexibility and adaptability doesn't involve crazy amount of inconvenience for the customer service agent all the time. It's a matter of caring and just really going out of your way a little bit. It doesn't involve money, doesn't involve too much effort a lot of the times. So these elements can really, really help with the customer feel very, very good over and above the other tangible elements which come into service experience. Service quality models are important because while theory is good, but at the end of the day, measurability does help. For example, when we talk about the NPS score, there are companies which contact back customers whenever there is an NPS score which falls below 6. And they are like, okay, that is our bottom threshold. We need to take it, you know, as long as it's above 6, we're fine. We will get in touch with them. So it allows for better introspection and better way to work on improvements. Competition is huge. Quick response will help customers. Otherwise, customers will easily move to your competition. Technology helps that. these are some of the depictions of the various quality models which you can refer to. Now, when we talk about Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola is, as I was mentioning, 1886, it was founded, present in so many countries. Now, to maintain a service quality, to maintain consistency, they use a data analysis tool called QSTAR. They have their own operational quality operational management system called CORE, K-O-R-E. So they use a lot of these models, not just, you know, where they were founded, Atlanta, Georgia, but across with so many of their 200 locations, and they analyze this, they monitor it, they make sure that this is being measured very, very closely, because it is not a theoretical thing. It is something that, you know, directly leads to their bottom line growth, as we have seen. Another depiction of the models. Now, also, when it comes to, you know, service quality, we have spoken about a lot of elements. I will be delving into it in a little more detail in terms of the design element, in terms of the product portfolio, but also think of it in this way. So, for example, there's a company called Tyrak, okay? British company. They make very, very good quality tiles, okay? And they were very popular for selling their tiles, okay? So, at one point of time when, you know, there weren't such great quality tiles available in India, I remember a lot of senior employees of various companies going overseas, and when they were overseas, you know, picking up some of the tiles. Now, one gap which they failed to register, and a demand which they failed to capture from a customer, and which is a huge missed opportunity and which would have helped them to, stay on top of the game, is that most people buy ties. When men are buying ties, typically along with buying ties, they also want to buy shirts. So they will match a shirt and a tie. However, Tie Rack only pretty much sold ties. So if they had been monitoring closely, if they had been assessing this gap closely in terms of the demand, then they would have supplied, in a way, in terms of having a product portfolio which serviced your customer in a way which is more desirable for him. Because instead of going to two places, shirt and tie, and then you buy a tie and then you go home and it's not exactly matching your shirts, or you buy a tie and then you take it to a store and you buy a new shirt and then you see it's not working, then you go back and return the tie, they won't return the tie, can't exchange the tie, all of those. You'd much rather do all of that in one visit, right? Missed opportunities of service quality come not simply in terms of, customer service excellence or various other measures that we have spoken about, but they also come, happen in ways such as missed opportunities, inefficient product portfolios, where the customer demand, was not taken into account very effectively. So while we're discussing service quality, these elements all have to be kept in mind. Another example to understand product portfolio evolution, how to move with changing customer preferences. Because see, when we are talking about customer preference, when we're talking about customer requirement, it is not a static one-time mindset. Customer preferences change. Customer requirements change. Customer expectations change. So it cannot be non-dynamic. So for example, National Geographic, we are all familiar with National Geographic. It was a publication for the longest time. And then as there was more demand for visual medium, for AV medium, they were approached to create their own cable channel, their TV channel. And they were fine with the publication medium, and we all know what the future of print has been, right? And they didn't exactly go ahead with their Nat Geo channel at that point of time. Whereas there obviously was a huge demand for it. So when there is a huge demand for it and you miss out on supplying, someone else will come and take that place. So those same producers who approached them with, you know, creation of this television mode, having a television channel for National Geographic, said, you know, there is a demand for this. So if Nat Geo doesn't want to go ahead with it, we'll very happily go ahead and start our own channel. And they started History Channel, and, you know, the rest is history, literally history. So they went ahead and they said, well, you know, we'll start our History Channel and we'll start our Discovery Channel. And we all know how popular History Channel and Discovery Channel are. And of course, National Geographic eventually, you know, got into the visual medium as well. But here they missed an opportunity where they could have been a leader and had a practical monopoly. But now you have National Geographic, and you have competition from Animal Planet, you have competition from Discovery Channel, you have competition from History Channel. So that was a huge missed opportunity, which where there was a massive demand and the supply was not, you know, given, supply was not serviced because there was a resistance to change, or more than a resistance to change, there was some sort of complacency that, you know, not required. So there may be so many companies and ideas and, you know, products and services who are at the top of their game. Very, very, you know, this very, very content, very profitable, but you don't know when you're knocked off. So when Pepsi came to India in post-liberalization, when India opened up to international brands and Pepsi came into India, till then we didn't have Pepsi, till then we only had Thumbs Up. And when Pepsi came in, and there was so much excitement, and of course, Pepsi with its deep purse strings was flooding India with marketing campaigns and, you know, all of that. And at that point of time, I remember one of the larger beverages in India, you know, came up with a campaign saying, hey, welcome, you know, instead of showing their insecurity and, you know, they'll be kicked off, they came up with a campaign saying, hey, welcome Pepsi, it gets lonely at the top, good to have company, you know, showing, yeah, okay, we're not scared of you, we're not, you know, worried about you. But we all know how Pepsi has expanded, how aggressively they have expanded. So service quality is not only about retaining your customers, having your customers becoming brand ambassadors. It is also important that you stay up the curve and move with innovation, so that when there is changing customer preference, when there is changing demand, you know, customer perception and expectation is changing, then you respond to it. Because if you don't, a competitor will come and respond to it. So when you think about, you know, we grew up in India, we grew up with Uncle Chips, you know, which was a very, very popular brand of chips when we were growing up. But today, you know, we just hear about Lay's, you know, Pringles, etc. But Uncle Chips is not around. So when you have this, of course, there are deep purse strings, but despite deep purse strings of competitors, of multinationals, one can counter it if one is being proactive. One can counter it if you have a customer loyalty where it's like, okay, all the best brands from all over the world can come, but you have my loyalty, you have my business. You know, there can be that potential. For example, right now, well, of course, there are a lot of geopolitical reasons for that also, but there are a lot of countries, especially in the West right now, which are becoming a little nationalistic in terms of their products and services versus outside products and services. Now, there is that arising natural barrier to competition. So for outside products who are operating in their country, they have to innovate. They have to innovate and they have to work in a way that they can even counter this nationalistic psychology, which is taking over a large part of the West, where they are saying, no, we are not going to patronize international brands. We are going to patronize our own brands. So one has to stay up the curve. You may have the deepest purse strings, but if a country and citizens decide to get boycott, they can, you know, hurt the companies with the deepest pockets and get away with it. For example, Very often in India, we have had the boycott China philosophy that, you know, let's promote domestic, we want to boycott Chinese products. Now, that's a very, very strong nationalist philosophy. A lot of times the products and imports coming in from China are cheaper, but a lot of people, despite the cost advantage, say, no, we'll buy Indian, we won't buy Chinese. We are going to patronize our people, create employment for our people. We don't want to, you know, give business and revenue and growth to China. So now, you know, internationally, the competitive landscape is affected not just by business elements. There are geopolitical elements which are very strongly at play right now in the US after the recent elections and with Donald Trump coming in. There is again a very strong nationalist movement in terms of US employment, in terms of US business activity, in terms of US drilling, all of those activities. And countries including India have to stay up the curve. I mean, as I was giving you an example in one of the earlier examples, already, you know, there is clamping down on work visas, etc., for skilled workers in IT-enabled services, etc. Now, unless we can really move up the curve and show them that, no, despite your nationalistic fervor and all of that, we still have something to deliver to you, which makes us a cut above the rest. So please continue to, you know, give us that access to give our workers the access to, you know, work legitimately in your countries. Unless companies are top of the curve there, then there's going to be, you know, challenges faced out there. So when it comes to service quality, the environment the world over is in very, very volatile, is going through a very, very volatile, phase. And that's not about to get any more certain anytime soon. So keeping all of these elements and factors in mind, service quality becomes that much more important for business sustainability. Thank you.